Hello. I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company. Attractive to anyone in today's hectic world is that we Iranians have a part in our rich culture which is called Pahlevani culture. I try to define this phrase for you, but believe me, there are many values in Iranian culture which are hard to define for others since they are rooted in the rich history and culture of Iran. Let me say it in this way. Pahlevani culture grows people who are physically strong like a hero or a champion. But at the same time, this culture teaches these heroes to be humble, to have a gentle soul, strong will, and ethical and moral values. This culture is mostly practiced in a sports club called Zurkhane. And the sport which is practiced is called Bastani or Pahlevani sport. This sport is exclusively Iranian. By the way, I am at the subway. I'm going to visit Shahid Fahmide Zurkhane. Well, here we arrived. Pahlevani culture, beginning in ancient Iran, has affected all the nations and countries that once upon a time were part of this great land. Pahlevani culture and sport is an ancient sport rooted in the rich Iranian culture that connects the power of soul and body. Pahlevani and Zurkhane rituals are one of those traditions which carry a rich ethical culture within. The name has been inscribed by UNESCO for ورزش پهلوانی, heroic sport, or ورزش باستانی, ancient sport, which refers to traditional wrestling or a system of athletics originally used to train Iranian warriors in Persia and the adjacent lands. It combines martial arts, calisthenics, strength training and music, and pursues a state of spiritual peace and self-control in human's body and mind. Recognized by UNESCO as among the world's longest-running forms of such training, it fuses elements of pre-Islamic Iranian culture, which is clearly seen in Ferdowsi's versified Shahnameh, and later with Islam entering Iran with the spirituality of Shia Islam. Each element in Pahlevani sport represents the humbleness of the athletes doing the sport, their gentle soul, strong will, and powerful body. The ancient sport has been practiced as a means of training warriors for the battlefield since the Achaemenid Empire and was systematized as the sport we see today about 700 years ago. Here I am at Hasanabad Square of Tehran. There is not much left to the Zurkhane and I prefer to take a walk to my destination. There are a few blocks on the northern part of Park Shah. So, here it is. Let's go inside. The athletes have just started warming up. Here is brimmed over with spectators. Let me describe some of the features in this building. A Zurkhane is built inspired by Iranian Islamic architecture. Relief on the facade of the building, plaster work, and tile work are remarkable features of this Zurkhane. The walls are decorated with pictures of athletes, holy places, verses, and war martyrs. The ceremony has just started. The beginning of the ritual is marked by the murshid or master beating a goblet drum. The murshid is the highest rank in the Zurkhane. He sits at the most elevated spot and sings religious tunes, heroic poems from Persian literature and verses of Noble Quran, or repeats names of Shia Imams to pump up the athletes. Then the athletes enter the octagonal pit called the Goud, which is sunken around 1 meter into the floor of Zurkhane. stone seats are built around the god for spectators. Athletes form a circle around a veteran athlete called Demiondar. Then they follow his lead. Zurkhane moves and tools have an exclusive terminology, and the instruments used by the athletes symbolize ancient weapons. The three main instruments found in every Zurkhane are meals, wooden clubs that resemble war mixes, kapode, an iron rod with a hand grip on one side connected with chains on its ends, which symbolizes bows used in ancient war times, and sang, or enormous heavy panels that resemble shields. Sang literally means stone, and in the past they would be made of stone, but these days they are mainly made of heavy wood. Pahlavani culture can be a beneficent, good, and moral way for living in today's world that is in need of ethical and moral values for the betterment of human beings.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
When it comes to the relationship between the U.S. and the EU, things are not as black and white as they appear to be. Both may be united when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, but when it comes to trade, there are divisions. For example, the EU does not believe the U.S. should have economic incentives to entice European companies to set up shop in the U.S. And on China, the U.S. wants the EU to step back, but the EU can't afford it. That is the topic of today's program. Now, some of the highlights of this program that will be coming up: the U.S. pressure on EU, an anti-China policy is what the U.S. would like the EU to pursue. But the EU says it has its own China policy, and it will resist the U.S. pressure on that front. But to what degree? That's the question. Next, another highlight in terms of EU-China trade. China is the third largest buyer of European goods. And China, well, it's the most important market for imported EU products. Will that be the direction that the EU will take in terms of making its decision on this? We have to wait and see. Something that will be coming up later in the program. And then the U.S. anti-China stance. Beijing is a growing threat to U.S. companies, and it's pushing EU to use export control against China. Again, to what degree?
As tensions rise between the West and Russia, the U.S. is pushing the EU to toe the line on China. For years, Western countries have raised the alarm bells over the rise of China. The East Asian nation has been making steady economic progress for decades. It has also made significant gains in the fields of technology, science, and telecommunications. Beijing is now a giant producer in microchips. These developments have made Washington and its Western allies concerned. They fear that China's progress and its alliance with other emerging nations like Russia and Iran will dent the West hegemony.
I had a long meeting with Xi Jinping at the G20. We have met for over 80 hours over the last 10 years. We know each other well, and he's a little upset that we're deciding we're going to once again be, you know, and so are European friends. They're talking about the supply chain. We're going to be the supply chain. The difference is going to be we're going to make that supply chain available to the rest of the world, but we're not going to be held hostage anymore.
The U.S. is now pushing the EU, following its anti-Beijing policies. U.S. officials have told European counterparts to consider using export control restrictions on China. But the question is that the bloc cannot afford a confrontational approach towards China. The European Union has described China as a strategic rival, but it is pursuing a different approach from the U.S. Analysts say instead of decoupling from China, the EU is pursuing to de-risk its relations with Beijing. Decoupling refers to the separation of economic ties between the two superpowers, but for the EU, this is not in its interest.
When it comes to online media posts on this, it was quite actually amazing to see that many users many people who are online tweeting or posting on this are aware of what is happening between the EU and the U.S., especially when it comes to the conflict in Ukraine. So let's see if the ones that we picked for you actually show that. First up, the first post says, while the U.S. has started to increase pressure on EU allies to align more closely with its hard line on China, Europeans have been pushing back. Now, taking a look at this website, we went in a little deeper, why Western leaders are deeply divided on how to deal with China. Now, this was the entry was made on December the 1st, keep in mind. It said European Council President Charles Michel heads to Beijing on December 1st, the latest in the procession of Western leaders to seek an audience with Xi Jinping, the Chinese president. The United States are our most important ally, but in some cases, we will not be in the same position or on the same approach towards China. Next up, another sign that the EU will never help us put pressure on China. The EU and China agreed to work together to address global food insecurity after holding a bilateral meeting on trade and financial services. The next tweet, while the U.S. has started to increase pressure on EU allies to align more closely with its hard line on China, Europeans have been pushing back. There have been reports about Dutch concerns over new U.S. export restrictions to China. So there you have it. This showed these posts that we picked how there is pushback coming from the EU when it comes to the U.S. Let's find out what our guests think in our first segment of the Q&A. Let me introduce them. Dr. Kui Hong-Jian joins us. He's the head of the European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies. Dr. Kui Hong-Jian, welcome to Economic Divide. The head of the U.S., that is, wants the EU to be strict with China. That we know. Europe says, well, we can't afford that. And while the European Union has dubbed China as a strategic rival, maybe following the U.S. line there, is pursuing a different approach than what the U.S. wants it to. Because for starters, China is the third largest buyer of European goods. Why should the EU listen to the U.S. when it comes to this issue?
On one hand, there are very natural tendencies between three economies to have closer cooperation in trade investment. But on the other hand, as we know, if you just look at something from so-called geopolitical views, especially there are a lot of the efforts from the United States try to have some more competition or even confrontation against China. So I think there will be also more difficult situation for the European Union. As we know, mostly European Union try to always take use of its power as economy and also called a soft power or some other. So I think, yes, there will be some difficult question for European Union.
Indeed. Well, let me bring in our next guest. We have the pleasure of having him on this program, Dr. Ema McKinney. He's an eminent sinologist, editor, and writer at Strategic Culture Foundation in Moscow. He's got quite a sheet here in terms of his bio. He's also the director of the CBN Global. He's a writer at the Financial Times, writer for The Economist, and also a Nobel Prize nominee. Dr. Ema McKinney, welcome to Economic Divide. Thanks for joining us. We're looking at how the U.S. wants the EU to have a different approach than it currently has, wants the EU to slow down in terms of trade, for example. That's the bulk of what the U.S. wants from the EU, and perhaps to gravitate back to the U.S. is something that the U.S. wants the EU to do, but at the same time, the EU doesn't want to go through the decoupling process that the U.S. Wants it to, the way the U.S. is doing with China. Why should the EU listen to the U.S. in the first place when it comes to, for example, trade?
Well, I think the business community in the EU is very much against not just this anti-China stance, because they've profited from it immensely, but also the Ukrainian war. So if we're talking about the EU is a particular institution. It doesn't necessarily represent the business community. It's populated largely with ideologues. Scholz recently from Germany has been over there trying to make friends again, and then as soon as he leaves, he makes some sort of statement to please the Americans. So it doesn't appear to be going anywhere.
The infinite section of the program is upon us, and we have chosen, as usual, four topics in order to review and give you what's going on with these issues. First up, something that has happened that is quite unbelievable and has been committed by the Bank of England. Now, according to this piece of news, it has overcharged, but the amount is incredible. It has caused havoc as a result of what's called error costs, and it will cost taxpayers £200 billion. And the caption read, "Now we all pay." It went on to say years of low interest rates and virtual money printing through quantitative easing looks set to land taxpayers with a massive bill. Nobody issued a warning on that. All right, this particular visit made lots of noise in so many ways. The Chinese President Xi Jinping in Saudi Arabia, based on the three-day visit that he had there, Saudi Arabia laid out a lavish welcome as the Chinese president heralded what he called was a new era in relations, of course, despite U.S. wariness as the U.S. looked on to this visit. Now, the Chinese president and the Saudi King Salman signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. End deals was reported to be worth around $30 billion, but I'm sure the relationship is going to give a lot more or add a lot more to that figure. And keep a note on another development that came out of this summit, and that was the fact that the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, said that some portions of the sales of oil to Saudi Arabia will occur in yuan, something that we have said before in this program, that we covered in this program from before. The UK is experiencing something that is really bad. It concerns food banks. There are now more food banks in the UK than there are McDonald's, and that's a terrible sign of how bad the economy is doing there, and of course how people are dealing with the soaring food prices and inflation as a result. Soaring inflation and energy price hikes is forcing more Britons to rely on food aid in order to avoid starvation. Based on the counts that we got, more than 2 million people are depending on food aid in the UK. And finally, taking a look at the unemployment rate in the United States. Now, the unemployment claims are the highest since the month of February, as reports of major layoffs are beginning to grow. They actually were reported that that would happen, but now we're seeing that, we're witnessing that. There are reports of widespread layoffs in technology firms that we have seen to have happened, firms like Meta or Facebook and Amazon, for example, or other tech firms. And also it has engulfed major corporations, leading to a sustained decline in the labor market as a result. All right, those four pieces of news with what we picked for you.
You're You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
The in-depth section of the program is upon us. The notion of the U.S. even suggesting to the EU that it should distance itself from China, especially when it comes to trade, puts into question whether the U.S. either has enough influence over the EU and what that influence could be. However, this is a case where the numbers really do speak for themselves, as we're about to find out. First up, let's take a look at the trade balance between the EU and China. We looked at data for the year 2019. That's before COVID hit, to get a more realistic understanding. EU exports to China stood at almost 200 billion euros, while EU imports from China stood at 362 billion euros. That left a deficit of 164 billion euros. Moving up next, in terms of the products or what types of products were exchanged or were traded, EU's top three imported categories of goods from China, well, 54% were machinery and vehicles, 37% other manufactured goods, and 5% were chemicals. Now, the top three exported goods, 55% were machinery, and that's really important, 18% other manufactured goods, and then 14% for chemicals. In terms of the EU-U.S. trade balance, it's worth taking a look at. Does the EU want it, or the U.S. want the EU to trade more with it than China? Well, you bet it does. I mean, EU exports to the U.S. for the year 2020 stood at 353.4 billion euros, while EU imports from the U.S. stood at 202.9 billion euros. That left the trade surplus of 150.5 billion euros. Now, in terms of China's major trading partners, let's look at that from the Chinese side. ASEAN countries came in at number one, and then the EU at number two, with the U.S. coming in at number three. Okay, so very evident the importance that both China and the EU have for each other. So how can the U.S. then ask the EU to abandon China or to even lessen trade with China? Now, on moving along those lines, let's take a look at the Chinese trade in the first 2 months of 2022. To further drive this point home, this foreign trade in the first 2 months of 2022, well, the EU came in at number one. I mean, what a bounce back from COVID-19. It registered $137.16 billion, with the U.S. coming in at second. Okay, so there you have the Chinese angle to this whole story. All right, so there you have the figures, especially from the Chinese side towards the end there. Let me reintroduce our guest for a breakdown, Dr. Kui Hoon Jeon, head of European Studies at the China Institute of International Studies, rejoins us. Dr. Kui Hoon Jeon, welcome back. Taking a look at the French president's visit to the U.S. due to this Inflation Reduction Act, which has threatened Europe and European industries, in particular factories. Europe accuses the U.S. of profiting from war, and you have EU officials who have also attacked practically Joe Biden over these sky-high gas prices. Has Europe finally woken up and smelled the coffee there?
I think the European Union realized the real situation, especially its relations with the United States. It is not on this moment. Also, in years ago, the European Union, and especially some major member states like France, they raised the issue of to build up a kind of European strategic autonomy. I think it's a very, very big showcase for European Union, for the European countries, to understand that they could not depend on the United States in the security area, in economic and trade and some other. So to get some more, to get some more independence from this, from its relations with the United States, I think it's a very, very, obvious tendency for the European Union, for most of the European countries.
All right, Dr. Imon McKinney rejoins us. Eminence Sinologist, editor and writer at Strategic Culture Foundation in Moscow. Dr. Imon McKinney, welcome back. We keep hearing about the EU not having independence and that the U.S. actually dictates the EU's direction, but how is that done? Does the U.S. have that much of a stranglehold on Europe?
I think the thing about it is the European community itself, it doesn't have any independence anymore. Its policy is dictated by America. I mean, the EU has been impoverished by everything that they're doing. And there doesn't seem to be any pushback from any of these limp-wristed leaders in the EU. The EU is being treated by America as another sacrifice zone ready for plunder once it's been destroyed, just like they did with Eastern Europe with their shock therapy in the 1990s. And I think it's lining up exactly the same thing for Ukraine and then Germany and the rest of Europe. I don't think that the European Union has the backbone to stand up to America, quite frankly.
But when you want to take a look at to what degree Europe is going to keep listening to the U.S., that's the question. I mean, is it going to be to the point that it's going to fall off an economic cliff? I mean, is that how intimidated the EU is from the U.S. that it's willing to risk its independence and its union?
Will Europe cut its own throat? It's already doing that. China is one of the few growth markets left in the world, and to cut yourself off from that makes about as much economic sense as supporting the war in the Ukraine. It's a complete act of madness and self-destruction.
According to data, in 2021, China was the third largest buyer of European goods. It was also the most important market for imported EU products. The importance of China for the EU has become more crucial since the bloc's economy is struggling from the conflict in Ukraine. Tensions between the EU and Russia have restricted EU's trade options, and that is the reason why the bloc cannot lose a huge trading partner. Just recently, the European Council President Charles Michel visited China to make sure that trade ties between Beijing and Brussels would improve when China lifts its anti-COVID restrictions. The German Chancellor Olaf Scholz also traveled to China in early November to cement business relations. The improvement in ties comes at a time when relations between the U.S. and the EU has turned a bit sour.
I think we have very clearly defined our, if I could frame it, manifold relationship to China. And you know the three elements, indeed, they are constructive parts, they are competitive parts, and there are clear rivalry parts in it.
It has been argued that the U.S. is using the war in Ukraine for its own advantage. By pumping more weapons into Ukraine, the U.S. is actually prolonging the conflict there. The war has turned into an opportunity for the U.S. to push the EU to follow Washington's policies. Furthermore, President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act has turned Europeans angry. The act promotes U.S. businesses at the expense of Europeans.
The U.S. turning Europe into a vassal state is what I would like to talk about here and ask whether that has happened or not. The Russia-Ukraine war, which had U.S. planned since Crimea became part of Russia, achieved several goals for the U.S., which turning into the EU into a vassal state was one of them. But what is the definition of vassal? Simply put, a vassal is one in a subservient or subordinate position. The U.S. goal in the Ukraine conflict was to destabilize and weaken Russian military and economically as a geopolitical force in Europe. It then wanted to isolate Russia completely from the rest of Europe. One of the ways which it achieved that was to militarily encircle Russia through the NATO expansion. This involved the placement of American forces and weapons in European countries, while at the same time using scaremongering into making European countries think they could be next after Ukraine. These European nations surrendered significant portions of their sovereignty to the US, which provided them with military protection under the guise of NATO. And the US itself, let's not forget, the US has several dozen army, air force, and naval bases and thousands of soldiers stationed in several EU countries. But the US needed something else to make sure that the EU became a vassal state, and that was economic domination. This is where the energy card comes in. A natural consequence of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine was that the prices of energy commodities shot up. From gas to oil, European countries are still struggling to find alternatives. Just recently, the EU applied a $60 price cap on Russian oil, a move rejected by Russia outright. This was seen as a move to please the US and no one else, since Putin's war budget won't take a hit from oil price cap, since price ceiling were near market levels and it wouldn't hit ruble revenues much. And although it may be easier to find alternatives for oil, gas would be a different matter altogether. Russia was supplying EU countries with 40% of their natural gas. The US made sure this would be cut off indefinitely, making good on the US President Joe Biden's threat on damaging the Nord Stream gas pipeline, even though the European Union has said it will cut gas imports from Russia by two-thirds over the coming year. By cutting gas usage by 15% over the next 7 months, it would still suffer both from residential use and industrial use. The verdict is out on whether the EU's efforts to have gas supplies from producers such as the US and Qatar will pay off. The problem is there aren't enough LNG terminals in Europe to fulfill Europe's gas needs. So when you have rely on the US for your security needs and energy and economic needs, as in the case of the EU, you are left in a precarious situation, which is why the EU has been called a vassal state of the US. That's the end of this segment of the program.
We've already told you how the EU is subservient to the US. The US goal of breaking the EU apart, from the looks of it, is in full swing, and it continues, since when it comes to the Ukraine conflict, there are no signs that it's going to end anytime soon. And a final blow could come in the form of China, since the US wants to do to China what it's done to Russia, albeit at a slower pace maybe. But nevertheless, China being a target, maybe that's why it is telling the EU to slow down trade with China. That does it for this edition of the program. Again, great to have you with us week in, week out. Fumiko Watabe and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
In the US, two men from Tennessee have been arrested for allegedly plotting to kill FBI agents who were investigating them. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the story. In the latest in an ever-growing list of criminal charges brought against January 6 rioters, a Tennessee man was arrested on Friday, 16th of December, for allegedly plotting to kill the FBI agents who were investigating him. With the House of Representatives Committee on the Insurrection preparing to deliver its final recommendations on Monday, 34-year-old Edward Kelly of Maryville, Tennessee, was charged with conspiracy, retaliating against a federal official and solicitation to commit a crime of violence. Edward Kelly was already facing charges of assaulting a police officer during his participation in the 6th of January 2021 riots. Austin Carter from Knoxville, Tennessee, was also arrested and charged for his involvement in the plot, according to the U.S. Justice Department. The two men allegedly had a list of 37 law enforcement agents they planned to assassinate, including the agents who arrested Kelly in May for his involvement in the January 6, 2021 attack, and those who were present for a search of his home. An unnamed acquaintance who alerted law enforcement officials to Edward Kelly's plans obtained a list from Austin Carter, as well as a thumb drive from Kelly's home that showed a video of law enforcement officers approaching his home on the day of his arrest, according to court papers. The acquaintance also captured several recordings of Edward Kelly and Austin Carter talking about their assassination plans. At one point, Kelly asked the acquaintance to stash some stuff at his home, later clarifying that he meant weapons and ammunition. Kelly also told the acquaintance he planned to recruit people to attack the FBI's Knoxville office, according to the papers. Austin Carter allegedly told the acquaintance about his plans to participate in Kelly's plot, urging the acquaintance to definitely make sure you got everything racked, locked up, and loaded. Also on Friday, another January 6 rioter, who is a QAnon supporter and self-described poster boy of the insurrection, was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Douglas Jensen, a 43-year-old from Iowa, was sentenced to 60 months in prison after a judge ruled that he had led rioters into the breach Capitol building and towards the police officer Eugene Goodman, actions that could have led to mass death. The developments are just the latest in a meticulous and effective law enforcement investigation that has aimed to hold the January 6 attackers to account. As of 7th of December, 964 people have been arrested for their involvement in the 6th of January 2021 insurrection, charged with a number of crimes including assault of a police officer, destruction of government property, and theft. The list of those arrested for their involvement is expected to grow as the FBI continues to look through media and video footage from the Capitol attacks. Of the 964, about half, or 465, have pled guilty. The longest sentence to date has been for former New York Police Department officer Thomas Webster, who got 10 years in prison in September after a judge ruled he assaulted a police officer with a metal flagpole when the officer tried to defend the Capitol building. The Los Angeles Times has also covered the same story. Newly unsealed court documents show that a Tennessee man arrested in connection with the January 6, 2021 insurrection conspired with another person in a failed attempt to kill dozens of federal agents involved in the investigation. More than 880 people have been charged with crimes relating to the attack on 6th of January 2021. The Justice Department has said. Earlier this year, Edward Kelly, a 33-year-old, was one of many people arrested on suspicion of illegally entering the U.S. Capitol and assaulting a police officer. According to the FBI, Edward Kelly later discussed plans with 26-year-old Austin Carter to kill law enforcement personnel who had worked in his criminal investigation and made a list of targets. Court records show that a witness provided the list of 37 names to a local Tennessee police department on Tuesday. "You guys are taking them out at their office," said Edward Kelly, who was allegedly recorded by the unidentified witness on Wednesday. "What you and Austin need to do is recruit as many as you can, call who you need to, and you're going to attack their office." When the witness asked if the attack was taking place at the Knoxville office, Edward Kelly replied yes. Austin Carter later told the witness that this is the time, add up or put up, and to definitely make sure you got everything racked, locked up and loaded. Attorneys for Edward Kelly and Austin Carter did not immediately return messages for comment. Edward Kelly and Austin Carter made their appearance in court on Friday, 16th of December, in Knoxville, before U.S. Magistrate Judge Jill McCook. They are charged with conspiracy, retaliating against a federal official, interstate communication of a threat, and solicitation to commit a crime of violence. The Washington Post has also covered the same story. A self-described poster boy for the 6th of January 2021 Capitol riot, who led a mob pursuit of U.S. Capitol Police officer Eugene Goodman, was sentenced on Friday to 5 years in prison after a judge said he had led events that could have caused mass bloodshed. Douglas Jensen, a 43-year-old from Des Moines, Iowa, became one of the most recognized riot participants in widely shared video showing him wearing a black QAnon Eagle t-shirt and leading a crowd following police officer Goodman up two flights of stairs inside the Capitol while searching for the evacuated Senate chamber. "I wanted QAnon to get the attention," Douglas Jensen told the FBI after his arrest. "I basically intended on being the poster boy." "You put yourself at the forefront of the mob," U.S. District Judge Timothy Kelly told Douglas Jensen in court on Friday. "There was nothing patriotic about it, no matter how much you might not have liked how the process of electing a president was perceived." U.S. District Judge Timothy Kelly noted that Douglas Jensen traveled to Washington with others, carrying military-style rifles, was one of the first 10 people who breached the Capitol and waved on and encouraged others to join him. The judge said America's freedoms of speech, petition and protest carry the responsibility of doing so peacefully. "What no one can do under any circumstances is become part of a mob using violence and the threat of violence to disrupt Congress's ability to fulfill its role to process the certification of the electoral vote. That's what you did," Judge Kelly said. "It's a miracle that more people were not injured and did not lose their lives on that day. What would have happened if that group you led turned the other way into a chamber full of senators? God only knows."
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود
قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of Erdogan power's policies in recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. If you look at Europe, especially France, massive riots occur every now and then on the streets of Paris. I want to ask you, has the US President or the US House of Representatives ever supported European rioters? Have they ever issued a statement saying we stand with you? Is there any record of the mass media, which is affiliated with American capitalism, the US government, and their mercenaries, like some of the governments in the region, unfortunately, such as the Saudi government? Is there any record of them supporting the rioters? Is there any record of them announcing that they will provide this hardware or that software for the internet and put it at the disposal of rioters so that they can easily communicate with each other and carry out their plans? Is there a history of such a thing happening anywhere in the world, in any country? But it happened here, and not just once or twice. It has happened many times, over and over again. Well, how can you not see foreign hands at play? How can an attentive person not sense that there are other hands behind the scenes of these events? Other policies are at play.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Of course, they falsely pretend that they care that someone has passed away in the world. They are lying. They are not upset by this at all. In fact, they are happy. They're happy because they have a pretext for creating unrest. They lie. Here, the heads of the three powers of the state, executive, legislative, judicial, expressed their sorrow and sympathized with the grieving family. Then certain elements murder other people who are innocent and have not committed any crime. The judiciary promised to follow up on this to the end. This is what investigations are all about. It means following up on a case, seeing the results, and seeing if anyone was guilty of something or not. And if someone was guilty, identify them.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me. Through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Family members of the victims of the Itaewon tragedy and thousands of their supporters remembered those 158 mostly young people whose lives were taken in a crowd crush October 29th. Some read letters to their lost loved ones.
Last year, we made a whole bunch of snow ducks all around outside our apartment. Please come and see me in my dreams sometimes. Please come see me someday, maybe even as my future child. I love you forever, Seon.
Although tens of thousands were gathered, police did not manage the crowds and ignored emergency calls hours before the deadly crush. Among those who perished in the tragedy, 26 of them were foreigners. Five of those were Iranian. And like many of the young people who died that evening, they were students who visited South Korea to get more experience in the world and primarily more education to better themselves. Victims' families want the truth and those responsible brought to justice. A class action lawsuit is suing the government, which has often deflected responsibility and blamed the victims. It reminds some of the ferry sinking in 2014, in which more than 300 people died.
The law should be a law to punish wrong people, but the government is humiliating, insulting, and degrading the victims and the families of the deceased. In the end, I think this happened because the Sewol ferry accident was not properly resolved.
Tonight marked the 49th day since the tragedy, signifying the end of the mourning period, when the spirit of those dead to be reborn reaches Buddha and bliss. Frank Smith, Seoul.
It's a daybreak. Raju Yadav is piling up his stock for the delivery in the retail market. He's delighted, saying markets are picking good pace and prices in the whole markets are not fluctuating since last quarter. Earlier, I would buy limited stock, he says. But since the prices are consistent and demand is satisfactory, I have bought more stock than usual. I'm testing my luck, he says. Many Indians like Raju are optimistic as the country is picking up pace as the fast-growing major economy.
We are not strictly a very heavily exporting nation. Most of our producers actually rely on our domestic market. But exports are important for us because we do import some very critical commodities.
Experts say with COVID outbreak shaking major economies, India maintained its consistency in almost all sectors except the manufacturing and employment, which they say is like a diesel engine and needs a major boost. Many economic experts say investments are flowing smoothly in the world's second most populous nation, adding the country needs to revitalize its manufacturing sector, job creation, and address bottlenecks in power, mining, and infrastructure.
More than the economy, I would say our problem, what the manufacturing sector can boost is good jobs, you know, which all Indians will agree are lacking in India. I mean, that's why so many of us go abroad, right? Because these good jobs are lacking, we are wasting our talent. And the reason is that we have never seriously thought about how to make manufacturing grow.
India growth forecast is projected at 7% despite turbulent markets and war in Ukraine that shook markets. Based on Morgan Stanley and S&P Global, the country is projected to overtake Japan and Germany to become the third largest economy by 2030. Economic experts say trade tensions between the United States and China will also open up new opportunities for India, as the companies are considering India for production capacity as a second option. Many, however, argue